What's a chumbalone? I mean, you've heard me say it, chumbalone this, chumbalone that, chumbalone nation. What's a chumbalone? Chumbalone, first time I heard the word, was from Anthony Twan Doyle, police officer in federal court testifying in the mafia trial, family secrets cases. And they were asking him, Officer Doyle, his real name was Anthony Pasiafumi, but I guess he just wanted to become Irish from Chinatown. It helped his career, he said. They asked him, you're on federal tape agreeing with what the Chinatown mob boss is telling you about cattle prods and so forth. You're talking about taking cattle prods to discuss things with witnesses. Why were you nodding your head and agreeing? And he said, I just didn't want to look like some chumbalone, like an idiot, like a fool, you know, chumbalone. And that's where it stuck. So I thought, you know, given that we live in Illinois, the land of chumbalones, the state, you know, the new state slogan, which is Illinois, shut up and take it. I should have added chumbalones. I thought we'd ask a professor of chumbalonia, my barber, Rafael Rea. He's so technical about things Italian that he doesn't even like most marinara sauce. Because if you don't put anchovies in marinara sauce, it's not marinara. Professor of Italic Studies here. What is the meaning of chumbalone?
Someone that's a little, not altogether.
Someone who's stupid.
I don't know about stupid.
A buffo?
A buffoon more than stupid. I wouldn't call stupid, you know. But the chumbalone, it's a little, you know, where you trip on yourself. You know, you just can't go, you know, so.
Somebody tells me that I've been told that the chumbalone is from a cake. It's really the origin, you know, you're always good on the origins of Italian words. Like a cake.
It could be a slang for something. It's not used in my region, so I don't know if it comes from a different region, but it sounds more like somebody that's a little slow, that's all.
So chumbalone is more of an Italian-American thing, do you think?
Possibly. Could be, yeah.
And this bothers you, the Americanization of Italian. We've had this talk before on many subjects.
It doesn't bother me, you know. It's just there is a lot of misinterpretation. That's what it is. But it doesn't bother me.
Like, okay, another one. Marinara sauce.
Yes. Well, comes from mare. Mare is the ocean. Should have fish. If there is no fish, how do you call mare? The marines are by the water. You know, that's totally misinterpreted.
That always drives you crazy.
It kind of bugs me because I'm like, where do you get that from? I mean, you know.
So we'll talk to another professor, and his name is Charles Lipson. And with me right now, of course, as always, is Jeff Carlin, WGN executive producer of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And you know where you are. You're here with us. With all the chumbalones, me and you in Chumbalone Nation, on the Chicago Way, on WGN Plus.
Look at this. The Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Every month or so, we've got a new feature on the Chicago Way where we bring someone with a brain big enough to handle the issues of the week. And my favorite is Professor Charles Lipson of the University of Chicago, well-known, internationally known political scientist, but also contributor to Real Clear Politics, my friend Tom Bevan, and his website. And welcome to the Chicago Way, Charles Lipson.
Thank you very much, John. Of all the introductions I've had, that's the most recent.
very good. Bilbo Baggins at his birthday party. Recently, you wrote a piece in Real Clear about what is to come with respect to William Barr, the Attorney General, the Democrats fighting him, and the panic spreading through, I would call them, the Kamalists of the federal government. Those people, those bureaucrats who believe they rule and run things and will thwart the elected authority in order to maintain their power. Hence, Kamalists.
Yeah, I think, aside from the upcoming election, this is the biggest story. And if somebody tells the mainstream media, I'd love to see it covered. It seems to me that what happened was a whole series of unethical, improper, and almost certainly illegal acts that were committed to begin spying on the Trump campaign and to damage it in a variety of other ways. What then happened, this is just my speculation of it, but it's based on pretty close reading of all the investigative reports that have come out, is that after Trump was elected, a lot of the things that had been done were all of a sudden going to make the people who did them incredibly vulnerable. And they began working incredibly hard to try to cover up and a variety of other things. I think it's also the case that because Trump was such a marginal figure within the Republican establishment, he didn't come in an organized way. You can almost see his administration now getting organized, finally, after a couple of years. And the reason for that is that normally, if you come in as a new Republican president after 8 years of a Democratic president, the number three man or woman in the Defense Department would become the new head of the Defense Department and so on across agencies. But that's precisely what Trump did not want. And as a result, it was a disorganized administration. And you saw all the holdovers, Sally Yates, who became acting attorney general, and Comey, who was held over and so forth. Some of these people were actually out to get Donald Trump. And I think what you're seeing now, there's a very serious attorney general in Bill Barr. He started in the CIA. He's been attorney general before. This is not his first rodeo. And what you see now is a desperate attempt to smear him.
The people who coalesced around him all have had FBI files. All were known to the FBI, including Trump, his family, his organization, for dealings that were just maybe not necessarily illegal, but people they, you know, associated with that were nefarious in one way or another. Do you feel like there was this idea like, well, all these people coming together may smell dangerous or may not understand, or maybe there may be something that is detrimental to the Republic in the eyes of those who are investigating. And then it spun out of control because it got political.
That's a real possibility. That is, the people in the FBI and elsewhere, almost certainly, they've devoted their lives to these things. I'm talking about the high officials as well as the rank and file. They're taking jobs that pay under $200,000 a year when they could earn five times that much in the private sector. They have a dedication to the Republic. I'm not trying to smear their initial motivations. But I think what happens in a lot of these is that we have standard procedures that should check them. And if you look at what happened in the investigation at the FBI, they moved everything into Comey's office and those of his friends around him. There were no checks and balances. They removed all the stuff from the New York office. And I believe there were a couple of other big players in this, and they were political from the very beginning. Brennan, and maybe who was head of the CIA, and maybe Clapper, who was nominally at least his boss, the head of all national intelligence. And Brennan seems to have outsourced a number of things to foreign intelligence agencies. Why would you do that? Because I may not be able to get a warrant to spy on Jeff Carlin or John Cass, but I can ask the British to do it. When they do it, they don't need a warrant. You're a foreign citizen to them. But then they share the information back, and somebody in the U.S., it could be Susan Rice, it could be Samantha Power at the U.N., says the name Jeff Carlin, which should have been blacked out because it's protected, let's unmask that. And then toward the very end of the Obama administration, he changed a number of rules so that that information, including your name, was much more widely shared. So it was almost certainly going to leak out. The other area, besides the intelligence agencies, is that we're now seeing deeper involvement by the State Department. And these are key political aides to John Kerry. And, of course, they all had close associations with Hillary Clinton. So we need to understand exactly what the Clinton campaign's role in this. By the way, final point, this has a lot of political implications going forward, because remember, the administration that did this, the vice president was Joe Biden. And Biden's claim to fame, purportedly, is that he's an expert on foreign affairs. So he's going to not be able to say, hey, I'm Sergeant Schultz here. I know nothing.
What is he doing in the uniform, General Hogan, please? Oh, you went too far. I must report this. It would be worth my life if I do not report this.
It's only until tomorrow, and he's going to take it off again. After he steals the tank.
Oh?
From the Panzer Division.
Oh!
He brings it here into the barracks.
Oh, I see nothing. I was not here. I did not even get up this morning.
The insiders at in the intelligence community, to Jeff's point about maybe they thought something was going, you know, that's a common question. Maybe they're decent people who thought something was wrong. Something was. My contention is that when you break down, when you stop thinking of yourself as a public servant to the Republic and think of yourself as the Praetorian Guard of the Emperor's, right, some bad juju happens. Some bad stuff happens. And
right,
you get people like Page and Strzok and people like this operating the way they did because they are that type of person throughout history. You see that deputy minister, right?
Yes, exactly. John, let's go to an area that you know so much more about than I do and than almost anybody does, which is corruption of public officials and flipping them when you've really... I think the key to all of this is who flips. And the people who flip, of course, are the people that they've just got dead to rights. This will be somebody who has leaked information to the media. Let's say this is the kind of Al Capone tax issue. You know, you once you get them on that... And they're looking at time. So you're looking at, let's say, a Bruce Orr and his wife, Nellie, is vulnerable, and you start to put pressure on him. Tell me how you see this kind of an investigation going.
You bring them into a room, and you grab the softest part of them. And
shark!
And you win their hearts and minds.
Right.
And that is how it's done, just like Oppo Research is done.
Right.
We have a belief that somehow we have like the Hallmark card fairy tale belief in politics that we want to think we're a part of and not the other, not whoever the other is, our opponent. But the reality, of course, is it's all power, right? It's all about power. And that's what they played, even when they said, the president had this meeting with Vice President Biden and all the relevant players.
All by the book.
And said by the book. You brought this up the last time you were here, and thank you for that, because nobody said, when I heard by the book, right?
Yeah.
That's the person who put that down was
Susan Rice. The so national security advisor.
She's the one I take into the room without her lawyer.
Right.
I would just have a conversation with her on a park bench somewhere in Washington. where she can hear me and I can hear her, and then I explain the reality of life to her.
Right.
That's what will happen.
Right.
No violence, okay? I didn't mean like to paint a picture like 3 days of the Condor or something.
Yeah.
Because she
you
knows.
You don't have to have a fish wrapped in a newspaper.
The way this drama plays out historically, for the what history demands, is that in order to save the republic that they said they would protect, a few of them have to be burned.
Absolutely. And it can't be, you know, the under assistant West Coast promotion man. It's got to be senior guys and women. And you have to, in that case, you have to work toward the center. But you don't necessarily start with the lowest people. You start with the most vulnerable people. So I would say it would be somebody like Lisa Page, or it might be Jim Baker, who was the lawyer. Whoever you have dead to rights for leaking classified documents and that sort of thing.
Even Comey could be one.
Comey could be one, but you don't go for him at first, because for him, even pleading, even if he got no time or anything, would leave him as the most disgraced FBI director ever. Remember, people who have my perspective and yours, maybe yours as well, Jeff, see him already as a disgraced director, but that's not true.
Commonly,
a lot of people think he was really doing his job. He wasn't particularly partisan. People who are going after him are partisan. What's disturbing me right now is how difficult it's been to get a lot of the redacted documents, classified documents, declassified. Now, declassified doesn't mean that they're going to show up in the Tribune. It just means that they can be circulated among the prosecutors who don't have high security clearances and so forth. And what that tells me is something that you've stressed a lot, John, and that is, you don't call it the deep state, but the deep state actually began in Turkey.
Yes.
Right. That was a term in Turkey. And what did it mean? It meant that if politicians got off the road and were trying to change the government in a way that Erdogan eventually did.
And that, others.
Huh?
And his predecessors.
Yes. That the military in particular would try to return it. And it was to its traditional status. And that's what the deep state doesn't have that meaning in the U.S. What it means is the lowest learners, these mid-level bureaucrats who, in the progressive view, starting with Woodrow Wilson a century ago, the progressive view was that these are just highly qualified professionals. They don't have a political view. But we can see that's just wrong. Some do. And I mean, all people have their own views. The question is, do they act on them? And the Strzok and Page texts and so forth, and a lot of the other things we're seeing are that there were political motivations here.
Which is why I refer to the professor as Kemalists, because they are the deep state in that context.
Well, we need to uncover that, because there is,
well,
in the whole
why.
Executive branch, there is one elected official, and that is the president.
Now, tell us why this is more, because Jeff and I want to know, why is this more than just a partisan thing? Why is it important? Some Democrats would say, really? I mean, it's just Democrats versus Republicans. Some of us think it's much more fundamental than that, and it's more important than that. What would you say?
In Chicago, we had the experience of John Berge. Was a policeman. I'm sure a lot of the people he brought in and his colleagues brought into that station house, they knew were guilty. In their mind, they were guilty. And what did they do? They beat him, they tortured him, they did all these other things. Well, we don't allow that. We have a rule of law that in the Anglo-American tradition goes back 1,000 years. And we've got very powerful tools that we allocate to the FBI and to the CIA, not the same tools. The CIA is not supposed to do domestic spying. That's why I'm saying that I think they outsourced some of this. And the FBI is only supposed to spy with a legitimate warrant. Well, hell, if they can go about getting a warrant just based on the fact that you have gray hair and that we've seen a lot of bad people with gray hair, then what kind of security do any of us have from being spied on? That's the fundamental problem here. We must hold law enforcement and intelligence agencies to account, and we have to be sure that they're acting with integrity, not only to protect our civil liberties, but because we want to give them that power to protect ourselves from another 9/11 and so forth. And if we can't trust them, then we're going to end up taking the other kind of risks.
Are you crazy?
Am I?
Look, Turner.
Do we have plans?
No, absolutely not. We have games.
That's all.
We play games. What if? How many men? What would it take? Is there a cheaper way to destabilize a regime? That's what we're paid to do.
Walk on.
Do you see this idea that, remember, there was the post 9/11 where it turned out that our intelligence communities were in rivalry and weren't sharing information. There was firewalled. And, you know, after 9/11, terrible tragedy, Congress worked very quickly to expand their ability to keep us, quote unquote, safe by doing whatever it needed to be, meaning borderline entrapment of people who may or may not have been radicalized, all that stuff that kind of opened the floodgates for them to use tactics that's kind of fall in a gray area in some minds of how you protect the Constitution.
That's an interesting point, Jeff. I guess I would distinguish between two kinds of things. One is that we lowered the barriers, or at least tried to, between the FBI and the CIA. Why did we do that? Because we had terrorists who were flying in and out of the country. And in the old days, when you had to take a Cunard ship or something, or the foreign threats were truly foreign and the domestic threats were truly domestic, it was a lot. It made a lot more sense to have a clean separation. But if you have transnational terrorist groups, the kind, for example, Iran runs constantly, but also the Russians and the Chinese and so forth, you need to have that kind of cooperation. The second thing that you bring up is whether or not we've simply lowered the standards in general. And what we did was we put those warrants into a special secret court, the so-called FISA court. And the problem at the FISA court is that the judges have to rely on the information that is brought to them by the FBI and CIA and so forth, and that information will never become public. So in a normal warrant against you, me, John, whatever, the warrant will eventually become public in a trial, so that if it was false, there's going to be a way to litigate it. And knowing that, police won't put up false warrants. But that doesn't happen here. So we've got to figure out a way to protect those judges. By the way, this has not been much reported. The chief judge of that court, Rosemary Collier, has now already issued a report to the Department of Justice saying that they believe that they were lied to, and they almost certainly were, because they were told information had been verified when we know it not only had not been verified, but that the people who were putting it forward knew it had a political motive, had not been verified. It was just full of holes.
Which circles back to what you said at the beginning. The effort by these Kamalists in the deep state, or whatever we want to call them, and their supporters in the Democratic Party, although they do have supporters in the Republican Party as well, as we know, who are trashing William Barr, who himself is an establishment figure.
Right.
And they've been trashing this guy mercilessly.
They have to.
Why is this now, in terms of the historical perspective, how you would teach this as history 50 years from now? Why is it important?
Look, what's going to come out, I think, is very serious evidence. When it comes out, the people who are putting it forward have to be trashed by the other side as partisans rather than disinterested finders of fact. You saw the Clinton campaign, Bill Clinton's campaign, do that against Ken Starr. You saw Trump do it against Mueller and his team. You can argue each time, was that justified, was that not justified? But the whole point is to say the indictments that are coming out are really a political game and not straight law enforcement. How do you stop that? You stop it when people start pleading guilty, when you don't have to take everything to trial, and you begin to get some people flipping and saying, yes, I did something really wrong. And that's going to be key. Not only are you protecting, if you will, the investigation, but also enrolling toward the center of what I think was almost certainly had to be a conspiracy. And remember, the Strzok Page text tell us this was run out of the White House. We don't know what that means. We don't know who was controlling this, and we don't know how high up it went. But listen, if you've got
a Chicago, it looks smells to me like you put if in Chicago, you would put a couple of your trusted political hack detectives on a politician and get what you can on him and leak that out to the media. That's what's happened in the past. I'm not saying it happens now, but in the past, long ago. Alderman McCutcheon is busted in Lincoln Park with his pants around his ankles studying teenage prostitution. Okay? These things happen.
Yeah, it's a hands-on kind of thing.
But interesting enough, we're focused on collusion and Russia, collusion, right? Dealing with Russia to impact the election. That's the theme of the Democratic Party. But now we see that the Democrats colluded, or at least hired, a cutout, Mr. Steele,
right,
to deal with Russian intelligence to get information on Trump.
Well, they went through two cutouts. First of all, let me say, I think that the investigation of Russia was very important. They were trying to interfere. They appear to have supported Trump. It's absolutely right that we investigate them. But Hillary Clinton's an old pro at this. Look at how they did it. They hired a law firm. Presumably, so they could invoke
attorney.
I don't see how this law firm was acting in a legal capacity. So I don't see how they can actually invoke that. But the law firm, which is Perkins Coie, then hired, apparently, Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS then hires Steele. Why wouldn't the Democratic National Committee just hire Steele if that's what they wanted, perhaps because they didn't know who he was and Glenn Simpson. Didn't they just hire Glenn Simpson? No, they wanted cutouts.
And who did Steele go to? But the Russians.
Yes, and now even Russian the New York Times now says that could be Russian disinformation. So for all the talk about the Russians helping Trump, and they apparently did, they had a second goal, which was just to create chaos.
Well, that's always their goal. They've been better at this than anybody, and they've always been better at this.
A columnist wrote this a while back that this whole thing could have been written as a novel by Vladimir Putin.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
I wonder who wrote that.
Yeah, I know. But it's interesting. The crux of this whole thing, and all really comes down to is, I mean, the idea that, did Trump really work with Russians, and is he Putin's stooge and all that? It's obviously all nonsense, and it all boils down to the idea that it's old guard versus new guard and who's political savvy and who isn't. Clinton and the DNC, they knew the route you could do this, and no one would technically notice, and Trump didn't. Russians go to Trump, FBI gets a whiff of it, and they're like, okay, well, there's some sort of interaction. He didn't report it because he doesn't know better, or they didn't know better. If they didn't do anything.
You know what I hear from the people who object to this now, who are not the sort of inside baseball types, is, gee, this is all old news. Isn't this all about 2016? I've honestly heard this from people. And it's hard for me to get my head around that argument. Because what we're talking about, it would be, again, to go back to John Berge, it'd be like, hey, he beat these people years ago. No, you've got to hold the organizations accountable and the people accountable. people have to go to jail for this if there were really crimes committed. This can't be 2 days of public service down at Operation Push.
No, and they're going to be burned, and the smoke will rise over Washington. It's going to be like something out of Game of Thrones, where you have stakes and screaming people tied to it. There will be Lisa struck, Paige struck,
yeah.
Comey, Brennan, so those types, and yeah. the ones you mentioned.
Yeah.
There will be some, because if that doesn't happen, and what we want to talk to Professor next time he shows up, is what happens if it doesn't. But briefly, if it doesn't, and the people lose their faith in these actors, these yes. agencies, how long does a republic last?
I think this is a real problem. We now have, with the exception of the U.S. military and actually the courts, federal courts, I don't think that there are any major institutions now that have more than 50% approval in terms of trust. Back in the mid-60s, before Lyndon Johnson lied us into the Vietnam War and so forth, when you asked public a question, how much do you trust your government, the answer was over 70%. Okay? And that has really declined. And if you want to see what happens to institutions that try to cover up and don't come clean and don't really clean house, all you have to do is look at the Catholic Church. They are now doing the right thing, but for years they didn't. You need to expose them from the outside. They need to put new people in, however painful that is. And if you don't do it, the ordinary people who sit in the pews don't have confidence that their priest, their parish, their bishop, their archbishop have the integrity that they've counted on for generations.
Professor Charles Lipson of the University of Chicago, thanks for being here in the Chicago Way.
My pleasure, John. My pleasure, Jeff.
For Professor Charles Lipson of the University of Chicago, and for Rafael Rea, the greatest barber in the world, the barber at Salon Hype where I go to get my hair cut. For Jeff Carlin, executive producer of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis, and for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, thanks for being here on the Chicago Way on WGN+.